It was so nice throwing big parties, jumping to the pool from the balcony, everyone swimming in a champagne sea, and there are no rules when you show up here. Bass beat, rattling the chandelier, feeling so Gatsby for that whole year. So why'd you have to rain on my parade? I'm shaking my head, I'm locking the gates. This is why we can't have nice things, darling, because you break them. I had to take them away. This is why we can't have nice things, honey. Oh. Did you think I wouldn't hear the things you said about me? This is why we can't have nice things. It was so nice being friends again. There I was giving you a second chance, but you stabbed me in the back while shaking my hand. And therein lies the issue. Friends don't try to trick you, get you on the phone and mind twist you. And so I took an axe to a mended fence. But I'm not the only friend you've lost lately. If only you weren't so shady. This is why we can't have nice things, darling. Here's a toast to my real friends. They don't care about what, about the he said, she said. And here's to my baby. He ain't reading what they call me lately. And here's to my mama. I had to listen to all this drama. And here's to you, because forgiveness is a nice thing to do. Can't even say that with a straight face. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Dr. Funk podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in live on YouTube and Facebook Live, checking us out on Apple Music, Spotify, and everywhere else that we're streaming. Donations are always appreciated. Happy New Year. We've lost quite a few legends since the last time we talked, and we'll get into that later. This episode, we have a very special guest of Dave Hampton joining us to talk about the state of the estates address when it comes to Bowie, when it comes to James Brown, when it comes to Prince, comes to Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift and a bunch of others. We're gonna get right into it. Thank you guys so much for joining us worldwide. It's always appreciated. Thank you guys who are group managers for sharing the link. It's always appreciated. For those having issues, make sure to go in and go back out. Maybe it'll clear up the situation, seeing that some people are having. This is what happens when you deal with stuff live. But hopefully people can see me. If you're having trouble, see me, go out, go back in, and let's see what happens. Crap, people are saying there's no picture. Try going out and going back in before I bring Dave in, and we'll see what's going on. You guys can hear me and see me. Kim, can you hear me and see me? Because there's a bunch of other people saying there's no picture, but maybe they're getting sound. Happy New Year and thank you, Spectrum. Great. No picture. This is fantastic. Let's see what happens if I bring Dave in, if you guys see Dave's picture, and then we'll get it on from here to see what's going on. Hey Dave, what's going
Hey,
on?
what's happening?
How's it going? I think we're having a little bit of visual issues. That's why I want to get to see if they see both of us or at least you. And then see what's going on with that. And I'll have you do the introduction. Sorry, my man. Thank
It's all
you
right.
for being here with us. So Dave is a pick. All right, let me see something here if I can do something. Sorry, Dave.
I'm fine.
Right. So there's that. Hilarious. Because they can hear you still. Let me try to do this. Give me one moment. How about now, you guys? Can you see me? Hilarious. Don't see anyone. Fantastic. Not on Instagram, it's here. Not sure what's going on. Okay. This is just fantastic. May just be Dave on the screen with no me. Did hair and makeup for nothing then? Don't see anything. Can you guys hear me at least? Just have to see what's going on. Okay. This is fantastic. Never had this issue before. Great. All right, you hear me, but you don't see me, correct? Audio only. Frustrating. So let's see if I can try to switch stuff up. This is absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to bring Dave in while we try to figure this out. So, hey, Dave, Mr. Hampton, hey. How are you doing? So since I wasn't able to give you a proper introduction, for those who do not know you, why are you a perfect guest to have on this show when it comes to the estate of the estates?
Probably from my experience working with various different estates of musicians and or musical holdings, mainly the Miles Davis estate. When I worked with Herbie Hancock, I dealt with his stuff. And right now I'm in the process of dealing with the Bill Withers estate.
See, there you go. And I appreciate your expertise on so many different levels. You know, as soon as I heard this, seeing about doing something, I had to hit you up. I'm like, hey, man, you want to see things?
No, this is where it's at, man. This is a great conversation to have. You're going to see a lot of these trends that are happening are going to piggyback, and you'll see some very reminiscent things. As I was looking at some of the documentation we were looking at before we started this show, I was pulling up some things, and you know, you're going to see some parallels that when we cast our eyes back on the Prince situation some 5 to 6 years later, we see all these different scenarios playing out where people are getting large amounts of money, medium amounts of money, and relatively small amounts of money in respect to their holdings. And it's interesting to see the conversations and the energy that's happened around each of the people that we're going to talk about, you know.
For sure. Now, the first thing that's kind of happened in the past few days that I've seen is this, separate from the estate issues, is the Live Nation and Ticketmaster being sued again for predatory and exclusionary conduct. And the consumer's class action suit revisiting claims defendants have created a barrier to entry in the primary secondary ticketing markets. What do you think of that?
I think it was about time. You know, for the longest time, AEG and Live Nation owned all the live venue stages, the majority of them around the country. So you could not get into a main venue to play, like even a House of Blues, unless you were there on Budweiser night or one of these wild offshoot nights that it was a permanent night of the week. You know, they own the small ones, the medium ones, the large ones. And that meant that any activity that went on had to be part of their big nest egg. It is a monopoly. It is, you know, it's about time. The business is changing because of, I think, COVID and a bunch of other things. You're going to see a lot of the things change. And I think it was about time that they did something. I know I'm involved in some projects now where I'm assembling stages and live performance venues for brands that exist outside of music, but that want to have a place to match their products and their culture with the users and entertainment and bring everybody together. So brand parlays and brand relationships are not going away. They're just getting more defined. But it had to happen because Live Nation and AEG really had a death grip on venues, and you couldn't really do anything, you know, of any size. If you wanted to tour, you had to make it happen. So, you know, it's about time. I think it makes it more healthy because it means that, you know, we're going to have to really look at engagement. And what does that mean for the independent artists? What does that mean for the artists? Because, you know, the road was where artists made their money. But if you go out on the road and the only way you can have a live show is by dealing with a monopoly structure, then that limits the money you can make. So it just puts it back into the artist's hands. We're seeing more and more activity that, as I was saying earlier, you're going to see a lot of these areas where when we look back at the things that we lived through with Prince, we lived through somebody who was seeing this time coming early on. He saw the abuse of the artists by the companies, and he saw the strength of live performance. But it's all becoming unveiled right now, you know, and I think it's great. But change is good. Change is good.
For sure. Now, do you think some of the things that they try and do, and we'll get back to the music club and the tickets, but for this, do you think they have their own people buy the stuff, buy the tickets, and put it on, resell it on, whether it's Ticketmaster or StubHub or other places, that these tickets never even get to the fans in the first place with the ridiculous fees, and then you're having to pay 3 to 4 to 5 times the price of the ticket when you never even had a chance?
Well, I think that what you're going to see is that's the nature of business, and that's the nature of internet-based business even more so, is that you're going to see whoever is willing to go through the effort of creating a doorway is going to be able to set the rules of engagement for that doorway. Now, whether that doorway is reselling something that's already for sale somewhere else, getting there first has always been the tactical advantage. So if you get there first and you get the whole section, then obviously you got a tactical advantage. And so AEG and Live Nation are losing their main tactical advantage, which was owning the whole venue and assigning certain seats to where they wanted to. So then everybody had to come to them to be a beholding bidder. See, when Live Nation AEG had those things, you best believe all the little ticket agencies and all the little people who were in the next level down had to go kiss the ring and figure out a way to get priority. Well, now that doesn't exist. And so now the strength is back in the venue. The strength is back with the promoter and the artist. And it's up to how they handle the next part, which is who's got the best way to sell tickets to the masses without it getting backlogged and clogged up. You know, we're going to see some failures before we see some victories, but it will create in the end a more dynamic place for people to make money in the live performance venue game, you know. For sure. And it's going to take this period of time. Right now we're still in a pandemic, so it's going to take this year as an adjustment period. But as soon as we come back from this, gathering is going to be just as fruitful as it ever was, if not more.
Right. Now, when he's doing the music club and offering, when Prince was offering tickets that you'd have the best by joining the music club, the first few shows of the One Night Alone tour, they weren't getting the best tickets. It'd be like row 13 and below. And I said to like let him know at these sound checks that it's going on. Mm. He wasn't aware of the situation because everyone, when they were doing sound check, would be in the front rows. He asked everyone to go to where their seats are going to be on the tickets. And then he saw it was row 13 and beyond. And he's like, okay, we're going to take care of this. And of course, yeah, it made Sam Jennings' job a little bit harder because now the music club, it was basically first come, first serve, but they got the first 20 rows if there was 20 rows of fans doing it. But he had to check them in and do other things. And then one time in Atlanta, there was people running everywhere. But that was the only way that he can make sure that the fans got it. Even though he was promising it, Ticketmaster was playing a game. Then yeah, when Musicology came, you know, it was like you're still getting the first 20 rows, but there's other people taking advantage of that $25 membership of the music club that people were figuring it out. Hey, scalpers were figuring it out. Yeah. That $25 membership, and then you can get tickets for any state, any country, and get the stuff first, you know?
Yeah. It's, you know, I think, you know, what you saw back then with Prince implementing that, and even the feedback you guys were giving him, was how instantaneously you can change things with just assigning somebody to it. You got to realize when you're talking about what happened back then, you're talking about when the web wasn't even in full effect. We right. didn't even have the internet like we have it now. So for you guys to be able to do these, this is what we're going to do. We do it. okay, here's the bumps that we're seeing, the feedback, and then the adjustment. That was relatively fast because you didn't have all these systems to go through. Nowadays, when you have to retool for something, you've got to talk to each little person that's handling some subdivided file and get everybody to be in agreement so it doesn't fuck up the whole wad. So it's really, I think as you probably look at this like I do, you're watching everything in slow motion because these people are beating each other up for no reason. You know, it's just greed. It's just greed. I mean, you don't have to own all the venues and do all that. And you know, everybody should get a seat. And right now, look, coming out of COVID, it's going to be a whole nother ticket incentive thing for people to even desire to go see things live. So they're really retooling an industry at a time when we're coming to an end. Some venues will not make the curve. Some venues will close.
Right.
And that's part of the process. And some venues will shape up and they'll create a new way to do business. A lot of what's going on is there's a new business is being created. That's part of what our show is about today, which is you've got major people selling off their musical wares because the music business that they were in and the music business that exists today are two different animals.
For sure. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So we're going to go.
Yeah.
You know, the first one we're going to talk about, although we're going in order, the first one we're going to talk about is the David Bowie one that was announced earlier this week, almost. It's close to the anniversary of his passing.
Mm-hmm.
David Bowie's was for $250 million. What a lot of people don't understand, that's publishing only. It's not his catalog. But still, because some people were saying that's kind of low in terms to Bruce Springsteen's, which was $500 million, but that's all encompassing. With Bowie, it's just the publishing. And you were saying that with the deal when we talked before, that this was giving, you know, it gave Amon enough time to grieve and do stuff. Is that correct in your eyes, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel like coming from just my experience in this area, you know, when someone dies, when someone like David Bowie dies, you have from 1 to 3 years to not only mourn, but to get together what is going to be a rolled out estate or legacy plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got really that amount of time. Generally, if you don't do it within that time period, it's interest in it falls off, it wanes, time moves on. And then when you try and bring it up, it's just a bobblehead. It's just an insignificant thing. And you cannot no longer build up to that point. With David Bowie, you know, his wife and whoever else was in charge and responsible, but primarily those who are left, they are the ones who are responsible for making the decisions. Well, she already comes into the relationship with a career, well-funded money. So whether it be $250 million or $500 million, it really doesn't make a difference. Her husband is gone. She has to make the adjustment to that. And she's still mourning, if you ask me. It has nothing to do with the amount that she sold for. It's just insignificant when you lose a person. So I'm going through the same thing with Bill Withers' wife. You know, Bill's been gone now about a year and a half, going on 2 years. And we're just now getting to the point where family can deal with it fully because they were all a part of the music business aspect of his career. And so it takes a little while to be able to say goodbye. So the amounts of money and the things like that, sometimes it's just about it moving forward. $250 million is a good amount considering what it was for. And I don't know all the details in Bowie's case, but again, you have to look at about what it's for. And when we get into Taylor Swift and some of the others, you're going to see these deals are deals, and you can put a number on it, go, wow, they got this much, they got this much.
Right.
But inside of the deal are codicils and little ways that exist and don't exist for the deal to be worth what it's worth and the best they could do, you know.
Sure. And just to clarify, like we're saying, the music catalog was sold
Yeah.
Not publishing. There's other stuff that was done for it. So yes, it's only in 250 million, but still, as you said, doesn't bring her back, and it gave her time to grieve.
Yeah.
Gave time to set stuff right and get everything going when it comes to that.
And David Bowie was the kind of an artist who, if you would lock down anything on David Bowie, it would be his likeness.
Right.
So, because his likeness was a very strong image. So his image don't have nothing to do with this deal. So understand that this is just a music deal.
Right.
So when you look at it in terms of that, 250 million for a cat that's gone and will never make music again, to his family and to whoever, is a good deal to keep it moving. And they still own the image. They still own the larger part of the likeness and the legacy he left of his other works.
For sure.
You know,
just when it comes to that, you know, and just he had things settled.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's how it was planned. They had the catalog done. These box sets that he comes out with that are ridiculously high priced. But it's like, you know, look, when he passed, you know, the album was released and then released on a Friday. By Sunday, he passed. It's fairly obvious he knew when he was checking out, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it gave her time. So this is it. It was all planned, at least in my opinion. They had a plan.
Yeah, they had a plan. And the plan was that this is something that had to be done. That there isn't necessarily a large legacy thing, because again, he curated his image through his life. He was a style maven. He was more than just a rock and roll star. He had drafted himself into the other things that go on when you build a brand. So he was very unique and iconic in that sense. Other artists, all they're dealing on is their music.
Right.
You know, and I'm not trying to say this one's better than that one, or I'm just stating a fact.
Right. Dave
Bowie is from a certain time period, and he's in that MTV thing where he was one of those artists that made the curve and all of a sudden started setting trends, and he was a brand before there was a thing called branding.
Just imagine if there was an MTV in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing popularity, because with his 80s stuff, I heard he wasn't too fond of it, even though mm-hmm. Let's Dance, Put on Your Red Shoes, Dance the Night Away, all these songs, Modern Love, he kind of hated that. Although I'm sure he didn't hate the experience of working with Nile Rodgers.
No.
He hated those tracks out, you know, and I
can see why, because it was still at the time part of a bigger machine. You got to remember at that time, Nile Rodgers was one of the few producers. You can count them on one hand. Nile Rodgers, Teddy Riley, Narada Michael Walden, and maybe a couple others who occupied the Billboard charts with artists other than their own.
For sure. I mean, and of course, the stuff that Madonna did with Nile Rodgers after the Bowie stuff kind of put her on the map. It wasn't just Jelly Bean Benitez.
Right.
Stuff. And I didn't hate Bowie's 90s stuff. I liked what he did with Tin Machine, Black Tie, White Noise, although a lot of people hate on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even them using Fame for the Pretty Woman soundtrack was a very smart idea. And then him hooking up with Trent Reznor from Afraid of Americans. But what was different with Bowie is what they don't understand. And then Robert Hilburn, a critic out here in Los Angeles, Bowie decided in 1990 that this is going to be his last tour where he doesn't perform old songs anymore.
Yeah.
And that he's going to cut it and put everything in the past and start fresh with the 90s. And the first person that Robert Hilburn said needs to follow in that direction because of how much he changes, whether it's his image or the output of music he's putting in. The first person he recommended to do that was Prince. And what's interesting is 5 years later, Prince was trying to do that. Of course, the name in 1993, and then in 1995 was just trying to do Gold Experience stuff. And then when he did cover a song like Peach or something, he's like, I'm going to do a cover of Prince, you know, but Bowie Bowie tried to do it. I don't know if later in life, if he went back to that old stuff, but he did try to draw a line with the Changes tour.
Yeah.
That, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was definitely a trendsetter. And that goes to a lot of these artists, you know, that we're talking about with these deals on this thing. They're all trendsetters in their own way. Taylor Swift. Like, Taylor Swift is a new modern day trendsetter, but she's also a good example of a bad example, because the type of deal she cut, which didn't allow her access to the front side of her catalog. And so she's making the best deals she can make on the backside of the hill, you know,
for sure.
And so these are things where you have to look at it. And this is a music only deal. So while Taylor Swift has some hits and she's got a career and she's got all those things, you got to remember, she's just dealing in music. She's not Taylor Swift, the movie star. She's not, what's the girl's name? Miley Cyrus, right? Where I had a disco. And no, she's just Taylor Swift and dealing with her music.
She's trying with the movies, but I think after Cats,
I'm not even going to go down that road.
Eventually. I think she's trying to do stuff, and we'll get into that more. Well,
they all have to try and do something. Yeah. The thing is that entertainment is a changing game, and the changing game is that many people now, old and new, use music as the activity to bring other people into the room who are involved in other shit. All of them want to get on a rocket ship, or they want to talk to one of these billionaires, be it Amazon guy or be it the guy launching ships into space. They want to get on the cutting edge to stay ahead and be able to be out there. But, you know, that's just part of what happens when it goes big and everybody sees that, oh, it's not just about this music anymore. Well, not everybody can make that successful curb jump to jump from the lane of music to the lane of international business, to the lane of branding. And, you know, very few can do that, you know.
For sure. Now, we spoke about Bowie and there being 5 years since his passing in order to get this music catalog straight. Mm. Let's talk about James Brown. It's been 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, on Christmas.
James Brown, because it parallels Prince.
Right.
And the reason why I say that is that there are several key things that, various parties have been battling lawsuits in his estate, you know, since his death in 2006, right? So that's a long time to be, you know, just trying to bat the ball around at what's going to happen. The other point is that, you know, the estate values, right? So you had one guy valued the estate at $5 million, and the other one placed it at 84.
Right.
And it goes for 90. So this is the same thing we went through with Prince early on, where all these experts and all these people were lowballing figures without any facts whatsoever. And it puts a value on the street in just the street sense of the word on people's lips of, oh, it's only worth this much. Oh, it's only worth this much. Right. And you and I both know it's worth considerably more and has proven so. But it's just this parallel that I see. You know, Primary Wave is who got James Brown's assets. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, the last time we talked, Primary Wave specializes in managing estates and song catalogs. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. And so they are not the bad guy. They are a business entity that was formed. Just like some of these other deals that are going on are coming out of Wall Street type investment firms that have figured out a way to monetize the return on these known quantities.
Right.
And they put it into a sum and they make an offering. So there is a way to do deals with the right factions to create, a doable situation that works, but it's this trial by media that gets everything upset. And I think when you look at James Brown's thing, if you look at the articles that came out following his death and around his music and around his holdings, I know some of the other things that were involved in James Brown's life and stuff had come across. People were trying to sell him, and it was very unorganized. And those things all go into why it peaked out at 90 million, right? Because if you ask any of the artists, dead or alive, even David Bowie, some of these other people, who was the influence, they're going to name James Brown.
For sure.
And so what good has it done for him to be revered and work as hard as he worked if he's not worth, if not that or more? But he can only get 90 million and David Bowie gets 250 million. It doesn't mean, you know, it's just something to look at. And when you look at these numbers and you look at the makeup of it, it's very typical that African-American entertainers seem to go for a lot less.
For sure. Yeah, we talked about that earlier too. And it's so frustrating. Like, you look at James Brown, 90 million. And then you look at the closest, because it's not even Bowie with 250 million. It's not even Springsteen, which we're going to for 500 million. The closest to James Brown, that huge catalog, those decades of performing, and ZZ Top gets 50 million. No disrespect to ZZ Top, but that's what I'm talking about. It's 50 million for ZZ Top, 90 million for James.
Yeah.
I mean, 250 million. It's not including publishing for Bowie. What is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. And again, that goes to the state of how things were left, who's in charge, and how much they're interested in curating it properly.
Right.
You know, James Brown, you know, he had a marriage that was or was not legal. That created some dissension and some fighting, and that lost them a lot of valuable time, I would say, in just settling his catalog and settling the business of what was left to divide after his passing. I just think that it's a combination of things. But Primary Wave being Primary Wave, 90 million is a drop in the bucket to pay for an unorganized situation like James Brown's was. And I'm not saying that to be insulting of James Brown. I'm saying it as a fact that there was not the organizational pieces in place to properly assess and monetize this thing. There's no way you can go from an estimation from 5 million to 84 million and settle it. Yeah, there's somebody don't know what they're doing in those three numbers, right? So we can see, and then you can have the David Bowie conversation to 250, the Bruce Springsteen conversation at 500 million. I think 500 million is he made out like a fat cat. Okay, it out like a fat cat. Because why? Because truthfully, other than Born in the USA and maybe one or two others, I cannot think of. Can you name me four singles from Bruce Springsteen?
Born to Run.
Park
Streets of Philadelphia.
Okay.
That one that was in Jerry Maguire. Secret Garden.
Okay.
And well, just because I know the stuff, Human Touch. That's what people don't understand. I know Prince. I know Taylor. I know stuff from back in the day. But that's just me. If you're asking, you're probably right. If you're asking someone to name four songs that just knows the Born in the USA stuff, they're gonna name you Glory. They're gonna name you everything off that album: Glory Days, Born in the USA, Dancing in the Dark,
et cetera. Dark. They're gonna remember the video and you know all those things. And it's all good. It doesn't mean that Bruce Springsteen is any less artist. It just means that he made out very well. Whoever structured his deal made out well. And his deal was not made on anything other than the strength of his music and his catalog, the desire for somebody else to hold his catalog.
Right.
He entertained a conversation. It was not based on him doing bobbleheads. It was not based on him, you know, having brand this, brand that, tie me into this, tie me. It was just his music. So these are successful conversations when you're talking about just their music. You know, in the case of like what we deal with Miles Davis, you know, Miles has been dead since 91, but the brand has gone on and prospered. and has introduced other things and created other brand marriages.
Right.
So we can launch a Breitling watch. We can launch a Montblanc pen set. We can launch a Macintosh turntable or do things in other realms or blended whiskey. We can do all those things because we're properly curating the brand to not only his music, but who he was as an artist and who he was as a free thinker.
For sure.
So there's just different ways you can take it. It doesn't cut off and just end. But this Bruce Springsteen situation, you got to realize this is just his music.
Right. And well,
that's a strong statement.
With Springsteen's with publishing and catalog, and that's where we get into more so in the Bruce thing. But let's, while we're getting honked out for this, Nisi wants to know, can you talk about the worth of the catalogs that have historic value versus commercial value? Before we get more into the Springsteen, let's do that. Historic value versus commercial value.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the historic value and commercial value, the two areas that, you know, those are the ones. There's perennial favorites and things that are always coming around. And then there's things that are guaranteed money makers, you know. And each of these artists, you can go to their catalog and you say, give me the top money maker, and you'll get a readout of what Bruce Springsteen's top money making songs are. And same with ZZ Top, same with James Brown. And so these deals all take into consideration those things as well.
Mm-hmm.
The yearly return on the investment. You know, I think one of the other things you got to understand is when they go to make these deals, you know, it's not necessary that you sell off everything. And I think what happens now when Billboard or some of these other publications report this, they act like these guys are just taking the money and just walking away and never doing music again.
Right.
These guys are free to do music again. They're doing it. They're just creating a logical payday for themselves. And in some cases, I don't know in all of them, but in two cases I've dealt with, the best thing they could do was not to sell, but to create a limited admin deal that allows you to still be in control of your yes and no, the final say on what who does what with the music. Mm-hmm. But to do a limited admin deal where for 5 years, somebody takes the lead seat in figuring out how to monetize your music. Yes. And then you say yes or no to their activity. That's a much wiser way
right.
to watch your brand. Now, if you don't want to do that and you just want to give it up, then yes, 500 million, 50 million, whatever. But the reality is that there are other avenues that you can choose. And usually an admin deal, you're 3 to 5 year period for an admin deal. And you know, selling the entire package gives you no opportunity to ever reconnect with your works.
Right.
So that's the other part of it. When the minute you go down that road and say, well, hey, Springsteen just got this. So-and-so just got this. That's cool, but you ain't them. And once you say entertain this conversation, there's no coming back. There's no return. When that money's gone, it's gone. And you're now like everybody else. So it doesn't mean that it can't be done. It just means it's a very cautious thing you do where you have to really weigh what type of hits are these. You know, in the case of, I'll give you an example. In the case of Bill Withers, he never, ever would want his family to sell. Uh-huh. Ever. So we don't even look at things like this. We look at the nature of the music and what it fits and it's in its own unique thing. How do we make it grow from this point on? How do we get it to where it's something that's dealable on a legacy conversation?
For and sure.
That's the most respectful way to deal with it. You always have to keep in mind what the artist's mindset was about their music.
Right.
Some of these may or may not do that. In the case of ZZ Top, one of their guys died, so they'll never really be able to make music as that band fully again, even though they're here with somebody else playing his instrument and stuff. But they're all older now. They're all established. It's a good payoff for who they are in rock and roll.
Right. And with James Brown, I know that the thing was is that he wanted some of the money from his estate to go to charities and you know, children's charities and whatnot. With Bruce, what's interesting about his deal He was only expecting $300 million. That's what he was trying to get. Mm-hmm. And look, he has kids, one kid that's 31 and two kids in their 20s, 29 and 27, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
We have COVID going on now, which is screwing up stuff. The Grammys just got canceled. A lot of bands are scheduling tours or postponing or canceling it. Harry Styles, Best Coast, all these acts. And you have Nas, who just dropped his third album. He's turning to Taylor Swift here. His third album during COVID, he's not touring.
Yeah.
Now he's a younger artist than Bruce. Bruce is 72. And another difference is he's been with Sony/Columbia since the beginning, since mm-hmm. the 70s. And he has all this live material. They just released a live box set, I believe, October and November for the stocking stuffer stuff. And this is it. It's been his label. And difference with Prince, who fought for his masters in the 90s and lost that battle until 2014. With Bruce in the 90s, they co-owned the masters together with Sony. So he had a good relationship with them. But again, he was only expecting $300 million. And he got $500 million, and he's still able, if we can get past COVID or learn to live with it, he can tour. He can still do new releases, as you were talking about previously. That isn't – his money isn't done. He isn't just getting $500 million, and then the rest of his life he has to live off that. He can do more and get more.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's interesting that you point that out, because in Bruce Springsteen's case, you know, he wasn't expecting this, but he got this. And, you know, it's interesting to see, it's chess. You know, this isn't checkers, it's chess. So he, you know, he really played a great hand. But, I think he's dealing with Irving Azoff and some of those folks over there. So you can never, you're dealing with somebody like Irving Azoff, you're always going to come out ahead. Because he's a hell of a business person. He's gotten some tremendous paydays for many people in music. And as we look on the backside of this, to where people are now gambling on what they've done versus what they want to return in on their investment, it's really a smart thing. You're just, to me, in some of the cases, they're just selling old stuff in the cabinet. You know, I'm surprised Taylor Swift got what she did for what.
Yes.
Because truthfully, her deal is based on, and I don't mean to hop around, but I get different ideas. I am surprised she got what she did, because she's really making a deal on what she hasn't done yet.
Right. And it's undisclosed the amount of what she's making. All it is that she's allowed to release new material, allowed to go back and re-record her stuff and put that out. She already has the next album done. I don't know if I'm supposed to be seeing this publicly, but Universal kind of told her to chill.
They did, and they're redesigning that into a lot of their contracts with people, because for a long time many artists have done this. They have re-recorded their own material to put it out as additional offerings for publishing. Right. So if you wanted a song from Lionel Richie, you could go after the original Motown version of something, or you could go after Lionel's version.
Right.
Both sound good. But one of them, you're making a deal directly with Lionel.
Yeah. And what she was able to do is, you know, like the old stuff, since she owns the publishing, this is something that people have to worry about when they do this. Since she owns the publishing, if there's movies or TV shows that want to use her old version, they can't. She's like, here's a new version. Here you go. And what I meant by slowing down is she already has 1989, her number one album from 2013. Already recorded in the can, but they asked her to just slow down. It probably will be out this year. Who knows if she records other material, but to allow her to do that, and just, that's what I find funny, is the paradoxes and paradigms between Prince and Taylor. Here it is, it's a big contract. Oh, you said I can put out this new, I can do this, I can do that. Hey, we need you to slow down. You're putting out too much product.
Yeah.
Interesting is all I can say.
Is that ever, you know, I mean, come on. Yeah, too much fun. Now you're getting into what I do. You know, it's like, no, you need to print more money. Because, right. You know, I mean, the thing is, it's interesting to see how everybody tries to drive somebody else and create rules for engagement. And it's like the way that we get along in this business and always have prospered is to help everybody produce the best work possible for the longest period. And that's really a strategy that has worked in every camp I've ever been in. Just doing the best work possible for the longest amount of time and be as consistent as possible and repeat those steps. And it always works, but you always have these factions that come in now, especially now, because there's a lot of people still involved in our business who have no business sense. They just want to get in there and create some funny rules of engagement whereby they seemingly make a big profit, not understanding that really, you know, hits and great music is something that it takes a little while to curate. And that's based on relationships. Bottom line, nobody business their way to the top.
Right. And we're going to, I want to answer a question from the room, but I want to get into Sinatra and Ray Charles and who's the actual only artist between those two who actually owns his masters. But we'll get into this question first. Are celebrities just tired of the business side of entertainment? I mean, you would think the artist would want to put the music or their things in a trust, if not for their family, then for the charity. What do you think of that?
Are they just tired of, what was the first part of the question? Are they tired of?
Are celebrities just tired of the business side of entertainment?
Yeah, they are because there is a sense, look, there are some people in this business who have no business in this business. And when they go to deal with some of these families, let alone some of the people when they're still alive, they're very rude, crude, and abrasive, and they don't take the time to plug in and understand who they're dealing with or their connection to their music or discussions about creative rights and what, you know, just how to address somebody when you're talking about cutting up their pie, you know. And that's just, it's a youthful thing because many of the new executives are young. So they don't take the time to know who the people are. And if they took the time to understand that some of these older artists with these thick catalogs are the reason why you even have a job. Because their songs still bring in and make money on a co-shared principle. You know, it's just, it's just one of the evolutions of business that still needs to be refined. And oddly enough, some people do get tired of dealing with the bullshit of the record business in the traditional sense. Now, there's still bullshit in the record business. Don't get me wrong. It's never good. But I think right now our business has so many levels of engagement because you have things that are really happening and popping and then things where people are trying to put it together and present it and show it out for what it is and have somebody jump on board. It's so many different ways people are participating in our business today.
Right.
That songs sometimes get put to the rear.
Right. And then we did talk about this last time, a primary wave and the Luther Vandross estate coming to a $30 million deal. What's interesting is, and this amount was undisclosed and we didn't have a chance to talk about this earlier today, is last fall, although it was announced today, last fall, John Legend sold his music catalog to KKR and BMG. So they came to an agreement for it. They struck the deal for it last fall, according to regulatory filings, amid year-end rush to transact. It seems like there's been a lot, and I did see an article, but I've been trying to find it, that a lot of... they were trying to publish catalogs before the end of last year because some things were changing. So yeah. I think it's not in the artist's best interest to get a deal done in 2022, but it was better for 2021.
Yeah.
Now, again, we don't know what John Legend's catalog sold for, but do you think it would be, unfortunately, look, Luther Vandross is a legend. Let's not even go there with stuff. Whether I was doing covers of Endless Love or doing his own stuff to where other people would sample it years down the road. How much do you think John Legend's music is worth with him being alive? Was he able to get a better deal than, say, the estates of Vandross or James Brown?
I'm surprised that the Luther number is so low. I would have to see the details of the deal to understand what they actually did, even though a lot of those songs are co-written and shared, you know, participation by some folks, you know.
Right.
I think that John Legend doing it is an example of he's a new music person. He's one of the new breed. So the new breed taps out at a different level because they're involved in some other things. John Legend has some other tentacles in the water that allow him to do what he does, so that if he takes this money for his catalog, it puts him under no pressure to deliver anything else until it's time for him to deliver, because he's now gotten full compensation for his previously done work again. See, he made it the first time around the track, made it from live performance, made it from developing an artist in a shorter amount of time, and then sold an interest in it a second time.
Mm-hmm.
So he has been around the track in a quicker amount of time than several other people who just came around and cut a deal one time. And he's still alive, yes, but he's there and he's doing other things. And he has no pressure on him, like most people have pressure when they, oh, I still owe, remember when people say, oh, I still owe the record company three more albums. I still owe the record company, you know, an album. And that was a big thing to them, you know. But it's such a different animal right now. It's such a different animal. But John Legend is one of the new breed that you know, successfully monetized the hell out of their music.
For sure. That's why. And like, look, you know, Prince became very enthralled with the battle for ownership and masters, I think, after, you know, getting to know Nona Gay and kind of like figuring out some stuff and like, oh, they don't know this. Now, why is there such a discrepancy? Because Ray Charles owns his masters. Yeah. Frank Sinatra was declined and decided to make his own label and re-record all the previous stuff. That's why if you're looking at stuff that's the Capitol years or Reprise, there's a lot of stuff that's the same. But he just said, well, you're not going to give me my masters? Screw you. I'm going to get Tommy Dorsey. I'm going to get all these people. We're going to re-record everything. That's what a lot of people don't know. Why is there such a discrepancy right now to where an artist that could be on the stature of saying you're putting Ray Charles and Sinatra, where Ray Charles was able to get his masters, and why are such more Black entertainers having that trouble now? And where is this coming from? Because we talked about this before the show that they're lowballed, and you brought it up yourself. What's going on?
Charles was smart enough to listen and understand the value of his material at the base level of what he was paying for studio time. What does this equal? This equals a master. And he was understanding of the strength is in who owns the goods. And so, yeah, he owns his stuff, and he's the first one to get that as a real thing. Now, in his final payoff, the other side of that is, while he owned his stuff, who died with more money?
Right.
And Sinatra. You know, because the thing was, they gave Ray what he asked for because Ray was hot, and they didn't think anything of it other than, all this blind dude don't know what he's talking about. He just asked for his masters. Give him his masters, right? Or whatever. But the bottom line is, that was very important. And it was the difference between that and when Frank Sinatra wanted to do it. That's why re-records exist, because you can't stop somebody from re-recording a song that they made famous. It's their song. You just own the publishing on the one that they did for you. You don't own the person. You didn't pay for ownership of a human being.
Right.
You paid for ownership of the master recordings. So now we're getting down to a literal sense.
Right.
Of what it says on the contract. And there here's where we're getting into how the next money changers are going to rewrite the books, because they now have to add new language to deal with the security of what someone does inside and outside of your basic agreement. And that's all it is. These are all basic agreements. And people are trying to modify them. And, well, you can do this, but you can't do that. You can do this. Well, we can now collect on all your old stuff. And you can go ahead and do new stuff, but, you know, it's everybody's trying to create rules because they want to cut up something somebody else did.
Right.
People who did it are willing to sell it so they can cut it up just so they can chunk out the money and keep going in their direction. So that's really what's going on here, is you have a deal that's just based on, here's the money, you take that, and I'm going to go over here and be me, you know. And at some levels, it's like that. But it's somebody like Frank Sinatra figured out, you know, I want to record this, and I'm going to do this. And you can buy Frank Sinatra's version. If you go to his publishing, you can buy the Frank Sinatra version and pay money for it. And it'll be just as good as the version that was owned by the record company.
Right.
You know, and that happens a lot. It happens a lot. You know.
Side note before I get back to Ray Charles, Sinatra's goddaughter, Nika Costa. Mm-hmm. Got to put that out there. I got to have Nika back on. So someone brought this up, but it's from 2 years ago, that Primary Wave Music Publishing announced its acquisition of the pre-1964 music publishing catalog of the genius singer, songwriter, pianist, and composer Ray Charles from his heirs. That was done in May 20th of 2020. Mm-hmm. So almost 2 years ago. That's pre-1964. So they're not getting the rights to when he did the Mac Tonight commercial in the 80s for McDonald's for Diet Pepsi. But still, that's big. And yeah, Primary Wave is getting a lot of acts.
Yeah, that's just like everybody. Like when I do Miles Davis, I specifically handle the tapes that he left his son and his nephew.
Right.
So those aren't tapes that the record company has, because they're not for them. They're the music tapes and ideas and all the things that he left them as individuals. So that's a different thing, and it's a different dealable aspect of things. But you have to look at, this is now where it comes down to record keeping and the literal versus the figurative. And, you know, contracts back in the day, in Miles's day, they gave you the right to Miles's horn recordings, his recordings with a horn. They didn't give you the right to Miles's voice and his spoken word.
Right.
So you have a very interesting paradigm there, where these guys are so monetizable by just the additional footage if they held on to it. When I was working with Herbie, he used to go out and do promos at radio stations where they interview you and they talk to you just like a radio show. And then at the end of the promo, they take the reel-to-reel off and they hand it to you as you left the studio. Well, we have boxes full of those. But we have boxes full of them from the time he released Watermelon Man. So you can imagine what it's like when I can bring up a tape of Herbie Hancock right after he did Watermelon Man to hear his thoughts then, as opposed to now when he's plus 80 years old.
Right.
Still alive, still performing music, but it's the ability to look back and get some of these things so you can say, wow, that's amazing that he thought like this and this was a, you know, what he did. Those are unique aspects that are still totally 100% marketable to the individual, regardless of whatever they were under Verve Records or this record or that record, because those records specifically had them for their jazz artistry on their given instrument.
For sure. Now, I just wonder, you know, we have Springsteen, who's still here with us, Bowie, who isn't, and these others that we talked about who aren't here anymore. Taylor, the deal that she got, probably dominating on streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Or she told Spotify to take out her stuff from streaming. Apple Music couldn't have her music on the streaming services until they paid more, not only for her, but every artist had to get more of a percentage before her music can get back on there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, and this is what I'm worried about when it comes to the Prince estate and its worth, is that they're releasing new material, whether it's Vault, whether it's Welcome to America. My problem is that the streaming numbers are so ridiculously and embarrassingly low. That plays into these artists that are trying to make the deals that they're doing, where they're actually selling their publishing rights, where they're selling their catalog. Is it artists that are older that are having trouble getting the streams that they deserve?
Well, streaming has always been cheapening of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, like I said, this goes back to Apple convincing everybody the single was worth 99 cents. Right. So you everybody agrees the single's worth 99 cents. There's no longer production money to invest back into the production side of music. So now everybody's music is cheapened. The experience is cheapened. This process is speeded up because everybody wants to have a single so they can collect their 99 cents and they can get on Apple Music. So you see how you can refine one side of the machine, but if you don't refine the other side of the machine, you're just creating a machine that just processes over and over again. And pretty soon you've taken this market share that we had where it was a special thing to be an artist and make music. And now you've cheapened it to where, okay, yeah, 99 cent. And so now we have to build an economy inside of music back up from 99 cents. And, yes. and that's hard to do when you look at streaming dollars. The only way artists make money on some of the things now is when they transition over and they'll do special wax releases and they go to LP, right? So, but they'll still only do a limited number of LPs during, you know, record week or whatever. And not every artist is able to do that, but that's a reality too.
Right.
Then, and it's just part of this bigger conversation of what music has turned into. This is not the music business I entered 44 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not. And for me to approach it like it is would be insane. I have to look at it as what it's turned into. It is a data management and asset management based business.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it as assets and management, okay, I look at James Brown, here's his assets. Bruce Springsteen, here's his assets. ZZ Top, here's his assets. Here's their music assets. Here's what they're doing. And then you look at each one, you can start to see, oh, okay, they got other shit going on. The music is the last thing about. They got other, you know, and so these deals kind of start to really make sense then.
Right.
You know, the structure of them for each of them, and even like I said, Taylor Swift, you know, she's trying to operate in some deep water. You know, she didn't really have too many moves.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you signed away your major stuff to Scooter, and that was it. His contract was airtight.
She didn't know, like, the only way that she could bid on it where she lost control of her masters was she didn't get a chance to bid on it. The only thing that she had was if she signed for another album, then they allow her to bid on it. She chose not to do it, but asked out of respect for Big Machine Records to let her know who is trying to bid on it if there is someone. And they didn't give her the heads up, even though they said that she was, and then found out it was Scooter Braun's company. So that pissed her off even more. And that's why she made sure that, again, didn't sell the publishing, did these other things to where she can re-record the material. And of course, Scooter, how bad it made him look and other stuff, regardless of Justin Bieber and Demi Lovato and other artists that were actually signed with Scooter, trying to say, oh, he's not really a bad guy.
No, it goes to intent. This is all intention. He's not a bad guy. He set up the contract.
Right.
So right. Is he a bad guy? No, he's an advantage-taking tactician who called himself your friend. And when you got what you got, in the beginning, everything was cool. As it came to the end and you wanted to round the clubhouse turn and say, well, hey, now I want to get my ducks in a row. I'm a little bit older. He said, okay, well, here's the deal we got. What did my man say from NWA, Jerry Heller? The deal you cut is the deal you cut.
Right.
Right. That's as raw as it is, and it's fucked up, but that's what it is.
Right. And see, it's just so frustrating. And of course, with Sinatra, he had his live shows. He had the Rat Pack. He had movies and movies galore. Stuff. So it made it more. Now I like Nisi's question on this, and this is in regards to the Prince Estate. We all want the music and special edition sets, of course. But based on this conversation, how commercially viable is it really for the estate to rely on that as a source of income? That's why I continue to keep saying that the money is in the merchandise, not in the music, unfortunately, for right now. How commercially viable is it for the estate to rely on that as a source of income, though, for special editions and stuff?
They have to go through a couple more roundings of what's going on in order for that to prove out to where it's going to be.
Right.
You're right. The merch is for now where it's going to be, because they have to figure out a direction. It still isn't finished because Sony Legacy has it, but they have yet to do anything, because you have to have the smoke settle from all this other shit that was done in these last couple of years in order to create activity. And Sony Legacy is going to be very careful where they reinstate and jump in the timeline, because they have a lot of correcting to do.
For sure.
According to the chronology of Prince.
So, and I always feel like this, take advantage of Prince being a pretty man.
Yeah.
Now, especially during the Welcome to America era, the Rihanna haircut, as they would call it, trying to be funny. There should have been more stuff with that image on it, not just the calendar. There should have been a lot more shirts, colorful. Stop with the white and black stuff. You can put some of those images of Prince on a pink shirt and a blue shirt. You got to look at what's going on there. This is why I feel... I won't talk about the age of the people running it, but you need someone who's a little bit more in touch with the younger generation and understanding where TikTok and these other things, to where those images go out and need to do it. And look, I understand TikTok and all this stuff, and I'm not giving away my ideas for free, because, you know, that's something that Prince respected about not doing stuff for free. But I'll have ideas, but I'm not going to give out the things. But again, it's just like this. Take advantage of him being a pretty man. Take advantage of the visualization and how much the younger generation is visually doing it, to where you'll have The Weeknd dropping his new material on Twitch instead of doing a regular
release
party and doing all these other things. You have to understand. And it's like you said, you've been in the business for 4 years, so you know what it takes to adapt. You can't keep doing the exact same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And
yeah. That's
what it seems like they're doing.
And you got to get original with it. That's the one thing I will give. Prince was very original in his approach to everything. So it left plenty of room for him to be right and to be wrong and adjust. And he was excellent at instant adjustment. But I just think that nowadays, for people to get back on the scene, like a lot of these young artists I see, they're very good out the gate. Their first, second album, they're very good, but they're so into the business right away that they're head over heels ahead of where their predecessors were, except that their music peaks out very quickly. They never maximize on who they could be creatively, because they're so busy doing these business mogul moves. And that's good. You want to see that. But I also want to see some substantial new blood when it comes to artists and artistic talent. And I'm not seeing as much as I used to. Now, I'm not comparing everything and say everybody's got to be like Prince. I'm saying that you have to really put things in a perspective that makes sense for the long run. And most of the people now, they're not, I'd say their careers maybe will last 5 years.
Right.
Maybe. Most of them will last 5 years. It's not, you know, even for Mariah Carey to be Mariah Carey and be who she is, as long as she is, she's, you know, that she's another breed of a kind, you know. Right. We don't have that. You don't see young women coming along that have that vocal range. That you just it's and when we do, how are we curating it? You know, automatically sending them off to Disney camp, or, you know, what are we doing? And what's the program? There's no program,
right?
You know, and that's sad, because I'd really like to see us develop some of the fine young talent that's coming from all around the world, but what happens is monetization of every kind has to happen so fast that now when you get somebody on TV, you've got to be able to fit them in between the commercial time that companies are paying for.
Right.
So it's no longer about seeing new talent. It's about how much commercial time do I got to sell? You know, what makes me a success? The content of the show or the commercial time I sold?
And it still makes me mad. Like, say, because overseas, they're still playing the Prince Grammy tribute.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that bothered me is, like, you're doing this with the Grammys, you're involved, and you put it on there on your notes of why you know, you deserve this much money for the past 3 months of your fees, meaning Comerica. I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
No, sorry. Now,
my thing is why during the show did you not have, and this would be it, not a commercial, but during the show you have Maya Rudolph or someone else talk about official Paisley Park, and then you get tickets now and see where Prince recorded all these.
That was a missed opportunity of big time.
Same with the catalog or upcoming releases. And then you constantly would have these things re-airing and it's already built in right there. And another thing I know, because I collect books and other stuff, and right now there is a printing shortage due to COVID and paper, but Nisi's bringing up a good thing about the tour books for Welcome to America. Is there were so many. There was a Welcome to Chicago, the California ones, New York, and, you know, Canada, overseas. And there was one amazing poster that they sold at the Welcome to America shows, a Prince with his back against a controversy image, an image of him with the old guitar in his hand. Mm-hmm. I love that image. That should have been reproduced. I understand that paper is expensive right now, and this is probably why a calendar is so much, and now we lost both of our images. Now we're just a full black album for you guys. But it's problematic to where I understand that it could have been something, but these are the things where I say the money is in the merchandise. Hopefully, Dave, you can still be heard.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't be seen, but you can be heard.
I'm trying to get back to where I was.
It's all good. No one can see about me. And yes. And we will be wrapping this up, and Dave is gone, but we're not going to be wrapping it up right now. But sorry, you guys are seeing the black album version of this. I'm going to be doing an after show after this to try to get the camera things right. But let's get Dave back in before we wrap up stuff.
Am I back in?
Yes. Okay. There you go. Now we have, at least it isn't like a total black screen. They can at least see you. You can see me, but they can't see me. That's why I'm drinking more fluids, is you're the only person able to see that.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah, there just should have been more stuff when it comes to merch. I understand a paper shortage, but that's why I'm talking about shirts and other images. And I just wonder if it has to do with photographers. Now, this is it. I know that some people feel a certain way about Londell. You need someone to be good cop. You need someone to be bad cop. And some of these images, it may be the photographers thinking that they have the trademark to the photo. But as we saw with Taylor Swift, anytime you take a photo of her, whether it's in concert or whatnot, she says that she owns the copyright to it because it's her image. Those are things that are important, that we have to see what's going to go on, if the estate can say going forward in the future, if a certain image, because it's Prince, it isn't the photographer that owns it, but actually the Prince estate itself, which could help with getting more merchandise out, instead of the same damn Purple Rain cover image or the same 1999 artwork, whether it's the inside or the inside layer where it's the band photo or just the cover of 1999, you know?
Yeah. It's a hard one, you know. I'll take a time out, but Londell has his own approach to the subject matter of Prince and how he pervades his kingdom. So that's all I'll say about that. You know, it's just one of those things. And you know, if for some reason he decided to point all of his things in the direction to where it was the best interest of the family and the best interest of the estate and long-term running to get the most he can, I imagine we could have solved a lot of this a long time ago. but right. You know, he was one of the unfortunate ones in the beginning who was spewing much caca about the value of Prince's estate before it officially had been done. So there's a matter of trust of the individual, you know. And you know, I'm the wrong one to say what I feel, because I work with these situations every day, and I work in them because there's an error of trust in that arena when you're touching somebody's works. When you get to the point of where people are lawyers and they're fighting about it and they're bringing up points, they're just battling for money in contention. And they're not in there with the families when these decisions are being made. And sometimes it helps to really have an eye full of what's going on. What are you actually doing and what are you actually dismantling? You know, when you say you're with somebody, what does that mean? You know, we all were with Prince and we worked with him. And so we know what that means to commit to somebody's creative life and be there for them. You know, when all these folks dropped in after he passed, it was, you know, many of us just stood back and just watched and said, who the fuck is this? Who the fuck is this? And they ain't been there in I don't know how long, you know. But you have to let all those things go on, because that's part of what our business has turned into, you know. For every highbrow person that is a legal voice and I own this and I own this and they're balling out of control, there's 10 people like me and you who do the ground game in our business and who just do the busy work that keeps everything plodding along. And we do okay as well, but we're just not high profile and we're not animated people, and we don't get out there and change position. We sign up for the long haul. So it's I have a very different view of some of the individuals who play in this game when it comes to Prince and the Prince estate, you know.
For sure.
It's easy to say that you're about something, but you really have to prove it. For everybody who's at Paisley, they're proving it because they're changing direction. They're moving on to different stuff, and it's still around after it went through being with the Elvis people and all that. We've moved past that, and that's a great thing. And I think more power to them. I was just over there with Prince 365, and they allowed myself and Scotty to talk to a group that had done a private tour. And we spent about an hour and a half, 2 hours talking to them, answering questions. But it was the greatest feeling to be back in there under the new management. And, you know, just have the ability to relate stories and answer questions in that environment. So there's a lot of good that can come from reassessing stuff and just looking at it with a healthy set of eyes. But I think we have to really examine everybody for their motives, especially, you know, again, you have to take into consideration whose place it was and how he felt about those people, you know.
Right. Now, aside from getting affairs in order or getting estates in order, especially when it comes to Black artists who may be looking to sell or for the future, how can you make sure that their catalog is not going to be undervalued as pertaining to people that aren't of color? What can they do to make sure that they get the most for it and aren't lowballed?
I think they can start to look at some of the longer running estates. You can definitely use Miles Davis as an example. Definitely use some of the others that are out here as an example to see how these estates have been curated and how they're, you know, taking the time to present whatever they want to preserve, protect whatever they want to, or get the music to the right place. Look, some people die off and they have no relatives and their music goes to colleges and their music goes to other places. And so you have to look at that too. And those are real good destinations to keep that music alive. Uh-huh. But to do nothing and to not have a plan, you should never do that. I think they should fully investigate what's been done and think about where whatever it is they have, how they want it to be remembered, if it's memorable. You know, aside from what you wanted to do for your family and your remaining family members, what else is there of it that can grow? Right. You know, but again, these conversations, they just don't happen at one time. You have to develop these conversations and be able to step away from the music and look at what's going on in life, technology, and the world at the same time, so you can fold over, especially if your music comes from a certain era.
Right. You know. And much love to Rodney and his 365 group.
Yeah, man.
And all that stuff. And usually I'll pull someone off screen and thank them so much for being on. But because since my screen is black and the image is only yours, I'll be doing my goodbyes with you on the screen.
Okay.
But thank you so much for your time and whatnot.
Hey,
but,
man, this was great. This was great. You know, we should do this again. And when any of this music business stuff comes up, let's keep doing it, because we're going through changes all the time, and we need to keep everybody abreast of it, because it really helps to keep us on focus on to what entertainment looks like today.
For sure. And you have this in closing: Dave, you should give a business class to new and older artists from forming an estate, livable will, or trust.
Hey, let's do it, Swifty. There you go. Let's do it. I'm down. I'm down, man. I'm putting together some stuff with Khalid Glover, and we're actually doing a presentation on branding coming up here on the 16th, I think. And it's going to be online. I think it's a very important conversation, just so that people understand the importance of looking back at what they've done and having something to look back for the new generations.
For sure. And I'm possibly, maybe in a few weeks' time, we can get you and Scotty.
Yeah.
Of course, with Scotty, he's going to do marathon shows. So we'll figure stuff out. We may have
to. No, I love that. Yeah, Scotty's good. Well, you know, I think Scotty's good because we need to talk about the live stuff. You know, you made a very important comment about Springsteen and his live works and stuff like that. And one of the things that I think is that the relationship he had with the record company, they honored his career. And by looking at every aspect of it and fully monetizing it. I think that with Prince, they just fully monetized albums and they didn't look at live shows. And to me, that's insane. You know, that was just as marketable. And so, again, that's one of the drawbacks I see when we look at the era that he came up in, just the way certain artists are embraced and the way certain artists are just contained.
Right.
You know,
just ridiculous. And just in closing, we've lost like quite a few legends over the past week. Sidney Poitier today.
Yeah.
Betty White.
Yeah.
It's insane. We all have to get through this thing, you know?
Yeah.
100 years is a good accomplishment. If you take away some of those leap years, she would have made it for sure.
Oh, big time. Big time. Yeah.
But yes, and you guys can check this out on the replay. Of course, probably the audio version of this will probably be the best, unless you're just going to see Dave, and that's great, and half a black screen. So it's like the black
is in. And continue to write in your questions to Doctor if you got any questions about it. And I'll answer the questions following the show and days after. So just whatever questions you have, I'm always down to answer them.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Dave.
Okay, man.
You guys, thank you so much for checking us out live
and doing
it. Donations always appreciated. I'm keeping Dave on just so there's something here for it. But I'm going to be doing an after show. I'm going to try to get the camera thing figured out so this doesn't happen again. But thanks again. Thanks to all we discussed in their estates. Thank you, Prince. Much love, you guys. Till next time, keep it funky. Thanks again, Dave Hampton.
All right.
Peace.